Oregon was a backwater in the wine industry a couple of decades ago. No longer. The state that was an afterthought for wine connoisseurs continues to grow more and more grapes and put wine in more bottles as the years go by. We have numbers and analysis from a couple of perspectives. Southern Oregon University Research Center, Source, recently released its annual analysis of Oregon's wine industry. From Source, we have Dr. Eva Skuratovich across the table from me. Dr. Skuratovich, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And Ricky Pritzloff is from Source as well. Good to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you too.
And to add a little perspective beyond just the numbers, we brought in Maureen Battistella, a guest of the Exchange in the past. She's a research anthropologist at Southern Oregon University. And good to see you here once again, Maureen.
How are you doing, Jeff?
Doing very well. Thank you. So let's start with Ricky and Eva. What is Source?
So Source is an applied research center here at SOU, and what we do is evaluation and applied research for government organizations, nonprofits, and businesses here in Southern Oregon. So in real English, what that means is when organizations need public input or they need public opinion or they have a question they want to have answered, they contract with us. We gather the information and provide analysis for them. So we use surveys, interviews, focus groups, and field observations to get that information and give from a wide range of representative groups. And then we provide that unbiased and objective data for an organization to help inform make decisions.
So in this case, who said we want you to do research into the wine industry?
The Oregon Wine Board did. And it's actually a pretty interesting history because it turns out in the past, the U.S. Department of Agriculture provided this information on grape production and wine production. And I don't know, Ricky, you have a little bit of the history of that.
Well, I believe it was the budget sequestration that led the USDA to make cuts to specialty crops, the research of specialty crops that led.
So if it's not corn and soybeans, it's going to be a harder uphill climb for that sort of thing. What? So how long has Source been doing the research for the wine industry?
Source has been doing it since 2011. I started in 2014 on the 2013 report.
And so if you weren't doing that, I mean, the wine industry probably could have done some collation themselves and brought the information in. But is it just easier to bring somebody else in and
goodness.
Say?
It is. I mean, I have to tell you, Ricky is 75% of her time is just on this project. It's a tremendous amount of work. I mean, you might want to talk about some of the challenges that you face doing
I could just imagine you've got multiple wineries, obviously multiple varieties of wine, varietals, for the wine snobs. So there's a lot of stuff to go through here.
Yes. It's a lot more work under the surface than most people would realize, yeah.
I mean, one of the biggest challenges we face, and it might be something that we'll talk about later, is shifting ownerships of wineries, grape production going in and out of acreage. Mm-hmm. She has to chase down hundreds and hundreds of organizations to get this information.
Are you using the same baselines that were present in the years before you started doing the report, or have you added some areas of data?
Actually, we've removed some, but we've added others. It's every year you kind of look at what you need, what's needed by the industry, and you make the changes necessary.
We've rarely been responsive, though, because in the past it's a pretty onerous – it's a really long survey form. Think mm-hmm. about it that way with reporting all – you report sales and acres grown. I mean, and Ricky can go into more depth, but we really responded. The wineries and the vineyards felt that it was a lot of information. It was taking a lot of their time. Mm. So over the years we've honed it down to make it much more streamlined.
Yeah, and it's one of many reports required by wineries and vineyards so we try to be very conscious of that.
So what is the overall picture? I mean, can we work on the assumption that as the economy has continued to improve and as people put more acres into wine, that things have trended upward?
That's what the numbers are telling us, definitely. Yeah, it's a growing industry that is providing a lot of different avenues.
Is there a consistent rough number of what the percentage growth is per year? Either acreage or numbers of bottles or anything like that?
One thing that we did yesterday in preparation for talking with you today, Jeff, is looking at percent change from 2013 through 2016. We kind of take it for granted now that in 1978 there were only two wineries here in Southern Oregon, and now we have 160 plus, 170 wineries. it's just an enormous change in production, not only acres, but in wine production, number of varietals.
So let me bring that to you as the anthropologist here. I mean, there were some vineyards that have been in business for a very long time, but it seems like there's a fair amount of newness to the business as well, particularly in conversions from pear orchards, which I notice anecdotally just driving around the region, places where I used to see orchard fans and return stack heaters and all the accoutrements of growing pears have come out, and now you've got vineyards going in instead.
That's correct. There's been a couple of conversions, I think, to keep in mind. One is from pears to grapes. Pears don't last forever. Pear trees pass periods of productivity where they really need to be removed and replanted if they're going to be. But the other pressure, I think, on the orchard industry is increasing residential and commercial development. We've seen a number of areas around the county that pear trees have pulled out pending land use changes emerging into the urban growth boundaries of the communities surrounding them. But we have seen conversion of ranch land or hay fields to grapes. We've seen hillsides just blossom over the last 5 or 7 years right around Ashland. That's just phenomenal. You go out Emigrant Creek Road and to see Irvine, the new Irvine spread is just astounding.
So before the hair stands up on the back of anybody's neck, when you were talking about farmland turning into potentially developable land, Oregon still has the exclusive farm use zone, which can't be changed, right?
EFU. Mm-hmm. It can be changed, but it's extremely difficult and expensive to change land that's designated as EFU because of those 1970s land use regulations that came out of the McCall administration. There are, though, areas of the county that were designated in the 70s as growth corridors, growth areas, so that when a particular urban community gained a designated density, then the county could move that city or that city could petition to open their urban growth boundary and expand. We know two classic areas where that is impacting it, and that's along Hillcrest Orchard and the Dunbar Carpenter Farm, which is within.
In East Bedford along Hillcrest Road, where it meets Foothills Road.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're talking to Maureen Battistella, research anthropologist at Southern Oregon University, and Dr. Eva Skuratovich and Ricky Pritzloff from Southern Oregon Research Center, Southern Oregon University Research Center, or SOURCE, about the growth of the wine industry in Oregon. We have some hard numbers in front of us and some interpretation as well. You can join us. Are there questions you have about what's going on with the wine industry on the Oregon side or from the California side if you want to ask the same questions? We would love to hear from you. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So the idea that there were two wineries in Southern Oregon in 1978 and 170 plus now, what are the overall numbers do we have numbers for Oregon just over the trend of the years that SOURCE has been doing the numbers for the wine industry?
Oh, well, as Maureen was saying yesterday, we were looking between 2013 when I began and 2016, this last year that we did the report for, there's 27% more acres in production, 42% more tons were produced in those 4 years.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's just amazing.
That is. That's a huge increase. 42% more tons. Yeah. So it's a quarter just in acres and then almost half again in tons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so that's for the state.
All right, that tons of grapes, Maureen, or is that
tons of grapes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So interesting. So let's talk about varietals then, because some of these must end up with slightly different numbers. First of all, why are they called varietals and not varieties?
You know, actually, it's interchangeable. We hear it as varieties sometimes. I don't know, Maureen,
I've only heard varietals.
Well, it sounds nicer, don't you think?
It sounds winey anyway.
Wine, it does. You know, I am the novice in all of this because it's not my area at SOURCE. But what I find interesting is, and it might be interesting for you all to talk about, that certain grapes grow more in certain areas in Oregon. I mean, there's assumptions made about it's all Pinot Noir in Oregon, for example, but it's really not. And I think it's interesting if you two wouldn't mind talking about where the grapes grow and what area regions kind of specialize in which type of grapes.
Well, definitely. I mean, Oregon has different climates. That's, you know, with the different regions. Pinot Noir, though, grows all across the state.
Pinot Noir was actually the first wine that Oregon was known for, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. That's definitely, and it's the most produced and grown and produced.
I could see the 19,471 acres planted in Pinot Noir last year, 17,744 harvested. The next nearest one would be Pinot Gris, which is maybe a sixth of that.
Correct, yes.
But to bring that home, to bring that back to Jackson County and the Rogue Valley and Southern Oregon AVA, one thing that's absolutely phenomenal is that Southern Oregon can grow almost every varietal that the rest of the state grows. So what you'll see is that we've got more than 26 recognized and hugely produced varietals here in Southern Oregon. And if you look at the charts, there's no other region of the state where that occurs. So Southern Oregon has the right climate, the right elevation, the right exposure, the right soil in order to produce fine grapes and exquisite wines.
The AVA, I forget the first A, the second part is viticultural area, isn't it?
American Viticultural Area.
So you identify a person, this is something that is identified as a particular zone for
correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So the Pinot Noir was the first in Oregon, and so was it because, Maureen, it was just Oregon was Oregon's climate generally, Willamette Valley on north was good for that kind of grape?
Actually, the first, and I may get some of this wrong here, but I think the first Pinot Noir grape was planted in the Umpqua by Richard Sumner in the late 60s, the mid to late 60s. And that's a growing area that has continually produced grapes from post-Prohibition all the way on. The Dorner family is there. So it's really, the Umpqua region is an unrecognized sort of historical spot. When you think of Southern Oregon, you think more south, but the Umpqua is just phenomenal.
Plus, it's got the Wine Institute at Umpqua Community College, so, I mean, people are acknowledging that they've got that stuff around them.
Yeah.
The use of other varietals, though, was it the kind of thing where there wasn't much of a, since there didn't seem to be as much demand for wine and people were doing okay growing things like pears, that they left other crops up? Or I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how people decided, you know, let's go ahead and try something else. Let's try to grow Gewürztraminer grapes here, that sort of thing.
Good question.
I think historically a couple of things were going on. The Extension was running trials. And
the Extension Service from OSU?
The Extension mm-hmm. Service at OSU out in Central Point, Porter Lombard, and we've talked about his important role in the history of grape growing here in Southern Oregon a number of times. So he actually had two grape trials, one in the 60s that caused the pear growers to kind of come up in arms and sort of expel him, and another series in the 90s that focused on other varietals. But people like Greg Jones came along that looked at global climate and latitude and elevation and could understand that certain varietals that were common to other parts of the world with similar characteristics to Southern Oregon were likely to grow. And over the course of that time, you know, period of the 60s, period of the 70s, period of the 80s, 90s, each decade, I think, showed increased experimentation, increased understanding of what really would produce here.
Dr. Greg Jones did work at Southern Oregon University, just moved off to Linfield, is that right?
Yes, he's now working in wine education at Linfield College. We'll miss him.
So a lot of people can make a lot of money, it looks like, or at least make a living at making wine, or at least talking about wine in Oregon. And actually, so did you map out in the research you did at Source in the wine industry some of the associated industries? I mean, the fact that you have, for example, a wine institute at Umpqua Community College, or is that just sort of ancillary to what you reported?
Yeah, there are other organizations that do a lot of research on that type of thing. I think Full Glass Research is who comes to mind. They do the economic impact of the wine industry in Oregon, that how it affects other industries, like tourism, which is huge, that kind of thing.
But we have, as a result of the wine industry here in Southern Oregon, we have instituted a certificate of wine business at Southern Oregon University. That program will be starting up this winter at Southern Oregon University. So right here, you'll be able to take courses in wine production, in wine business management, sensory evaluation, social media.
Sensory evaluation. Wait, that sounds like knowing how to taste wine.
Knowing how to taste wine, you're absolutely right. And students will be able to taste wine as part of their coursework. But I think this is also industry driven. One of the main things that just popped out of the census data that Ricky and Eva developed was the increase in direct-to-consumer sales for the state of Oregon, but also for Southern Oregon. What we saw was a significant increase when we looked over the period 1913 through 2013.
She's a historian.
Jumping around here.
You're working lots of centuries.
Yeah. It's funny. But we saw a tremendous increase in direct-to-consumer sales, particularly in the area of tasting room sales, in the area of wine club sales, in the area of online sales. And each one of those direct-to-consumer pops really represents a maturation of the industry here in Oregon. If you look...
Yeah, and I was about to say, I think what, and again, as the novice here, what I find really fascinating is how much the percentage that actually is done direct to consumer and how much that ties into local tourism. So one of the things that's, that our report is useful for is understanding the potential for increasing that in all parts of Oregon that we report on, and the ability for other industries to connect in by looking at the report to look at the type of productions that's being done and the type of selling that happens.
Interesting, too, in the sense that if you're doing that well in direct-to-consumer sales, it's certainly a message that you need to keep doing those sorts of things, or that if you're not doing them now, you probably need to, because if you can sell more bottles of wine by having a tasting room, maybe by having some music in the tasting room, that sort of thing, it seems to all work together. We're talking about the wine industry in Oregon with some emphasis on Southern Oregon. Dr. Eva Skuratovich and Ricky Pritzloff are from the Southern Oregon University Research Center, or SOURCE. They have compiled the numbers by the order of the Oregon Wine Board. To get a look at what's been going on in the wine industry in recent years. Maureen Battistella is a research anthropologist at SOU. We can take your phone calls and emails at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. And here's a call from Jeff in White City. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi,
go ahead.
My name's Jeff, and I just wanted to mention that the outdoor marijuana industry is probably larger than the grape industry and probably brings in more money. Perhaps you should be reporting how the weather affects the outdoor pot growers.
All right. Thanks for that, Jeff. Appreciate it. Well, within the scope of this research, but anecdotally or otherwise, do you have any indication that he might be onto something about marijuana being grown in more places than wine grapes?
I do know that there's definitely concern among wine growers about marijuana grows.
Being nearby to their operations?
Well, being nearby, affecting land use, mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Are they concerned about needing to switch over to that because it's a more lucrative cash crop or something?
You know, I don't know enough of the direct concerns, but I do know that that's a factor right now in the land use in areas where wine is being grown, wine grapes.
I can comment on that.
Sure, Maureen.
A little bit. Yes, there is a lot of there are many cannabis grows, but those grows are constrained by licensing. At least the legal grows are. The illegal grows, I think, is causing concern not only among wine growers but all agriculture. We see that the illegal grows are creating competition for water. They're not using water correctly or fertilizers correctly. They're not using the land appropriately. So that is a concern among all agriculturalists. In terms of the wine growers and the orchardists, what I have heard is that there is significant competition for labor. Cannabis labor per hour is relatively high, and there's a lot of poaching going on potentially among the labor supply.
Okay, I'm not surprising that cannabis came back into the discussion. We spent an hour on it yesterday as well. Let's though talk about what the trend lines are showing here. I mean, does there appear to be continued growth in the Oregon wine industry? I mean, has it been pretty steady through the years of this, which looks like your exposure to it started just as Oregon would have been emerging from recession? I mean, has it been a pretty steady path, or do your trend lines show something of a flattening out of the increases? Ricky Pritzloff?
So far, it has definitely been on the increase. It's shown steady increase, and I don't foresee that changing, but I'm not... We'll have to see what the numbers say.
Now, this is all about production, though, right? You're not so much examining demand and whether we're going to get to a point where, you know, with the population growing, it seems like wine consumption could continue to grow.
Absolutely. And, you know, what to me is interesting is looking at the production side. The weather is such a fascinating part of all of this. So, you know, there have been years that Source has been producing this report that we've seen production go down, or it's slowed a little bit due to, drought conditions, or we're wondering about what the smoke is going to look like in terms of production. I mean, it's an interesting industry to look at because there's those variables that you can't control to the same degree that others.
Right. Or even yesterday, Maureen was mentioning the upcoming rain that we're also grateful for this weekend could have a detrimental effect on the wine harvest.
But in California, over the Labor Day weekend, the reports are that the 110 degree days over a period of 4 days really dried up a lot of the California supply. So it's everything is weather dependent.
Wow, so bad couple of days one way or the other, too wet, too dry, too hot, too something can make a difference. And what about too smoky? Does that have an effect on the wine grapes as well?
It does. And smoke, it's called smoke taint, and there's been a lot of discussion in the news the last couple of weeks in Oregon and California and in Washington because it's been a bad year for fires. And I think what we'll see is that the winemakers' talents will adjust, will be called into play in order to adjust that wine's flavor.
Okay, so
finish.
Always something going on in the vineyards, particularly this time of year. We're looking at the 2016 Oregon Vineyard and Winery Census Report put out by Southern Oregon University Research Center, or SOURCE. We have enjoyed the company of Ricky Pritzloff and Dr. Eva Skuratovich from SOURCE and Maureen Battistella, a research anthropologist at Southern Oregon University. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks for giving us the news about Oregon's continued growth in the wine industry.
Thank you.
Thank you.